I just to say, in relation to this plenary, this is very much an opportunity for you to talk. You've had a lot come at you today, and some of us have been better than others at giving you an opportunity to talk with us. So this is a space for you to direct anything to us or to each other and just see what's come up in your minds.
Inform yourself.
I just wanted to say thank you because it's been such a well put together day. The span of what people have brought. So, thank you.
There may be some feedback.
The other thing that a lot of people have been asking me about is in the podcast. Ivan, you were saying you should go online fairly shortly, is that right, Ivan?
A couple of weeks.
Yeah. And they'll be online to be available, except for Mike's talk. That's not going to be.
I just wondered, we've referred to and talked about things that work, and I wondered what, in your view, are the edges of this discipline of helping people, and what isn't working, and therefore how can we grow, are there specific areas where nobody's really talking about it because it's not working, and could we maybe gently, non-judgmentally voice what they are and therefore grow towards being able to work within them?
I could answer something quite certainly on that. I think that it takes me back to a question I think you asked about if the government asks questions, sort of thing. It seems to me that often people come into our services and the placement breaks down and or they don't stay for the whole process of therapy. Or like the people that Mike was talking about who don't turn up to the sessions and stuff like that. I think you might see a lot of those cases as kind of failures, but it seems to me that if you were able to take a longer view of their whole life, it might be that even the small time that they were engaging, or the small sort of half engagements, will have had a lasting impact and effect, or may have meaning to them much later on. And it might just be something very simple like the fact that the therapist is reliably always there on time, or something like that. A small thing, but that may be the only reliable adult they've come across. Mm. Something.
Well, my background is architecture, so I think it was a bit obvious in my question before. But I deal with slums, and in my point of view, it's a bit of homelessness, or in the point of view of Heidegger in building dwelling thinking, I think it was what you had in mind, maybe. The question of dwelling, anyway. And I'd like to know if you have in mind sometimes these kinds of roughly living or handshaking the house as linked to trauma, as linked to some of these feelings of war. Because in some favelas, I'm from Brazil, in some favelas you really have an army inside the favela, and well, the feeling of being threatened all the time. So if you have thoughts about it or recommendations for readings and research, as it would be great.
Perhaps you could have a chat afterwards, maybe.
Just a comment, really. Someone might want to comment. There's been an extraordinary contrast between the film we started with Craig Lockhart, where the soldiers were still in uniform, still under military discipline, and there was a clear purpose to get them back in the war to where we finished. I don't know which is more challenging. I wonder if anyone would like to comment on it.
I think it brings up the issue that I noticed in the last presentation, which is the complete opposite. There's no, very little sense of boundaries. I mean, one is the alcohol. To be therapeutically, you just cannot work with alcohol on board at that level. And yet there's no, I was wondering, is he in Alcohol Anonymous now? Has he gone back to that? Is he trying to follow that program? What is containing this B-man? What goals does he have? Because with the drink problem, it's going to destroy things. And the drink problem, in my view, is linked to the traumatic attachment. We've got a clinical supervision group going where I do a procedure which actually brings out for individuals that underlying a lot of the alcohol, underlying the previous entry into the army, is a trauma early in life. And this traumatic attachment is most extraordinarily brought out by this procedure, this little test, in fact, where you ask them to, as adults, to actually imagine their parent in the room, and you ask them to do a simple separation test in abstract, in which they say, I'm more than 25 adult, I don't need you, a parent, or if it's a fearful father, I no longer need to be frightened of you, or I no longer need you as I did when I was a child. And these individuals, all of them, are just unable to do it. Mm. They have a huge autonomic reaction. Their stomach churns. It's like you're taking that umbilical cord and you're pulling, you know. They behave like disorganized infants in the early secure attachment tests. And at that point, what comes out, then you let them freewheel and they begin to talk. Some don't. Some find it embarrassing. So you have to choose a time when you've already got a fairly good attachment. But then the revelations come out of how they suddenly make sense of why they keep on sabotaging progress. Because they actually feel that if they go make progress, then that attachment, that parent will no longer be there to, you know, the idealization is that somebody is going to become, and often the therapist become, that substitute parent. And so this kind of thing, I think, is very much around this sabotage of treatment which you are witnessing, and the alcohol is very much part of it. I was wondering if there was a worry about imposing the rule that if you drink, you can't benefit, and what that would do to the institution, and things like that, all sorts of questions. We've had it all in us.
I think
the question was about
the difference between a post-traumatic condition and what we saw at the beginning, which was not necessarily, not post-traumatic in the same way of 10 years after somebody, was that your question, though?
Well, there's continuing.
Trying to think of the,
what struck my simple mind was the contrast between 1917 now.
Well, can I just remind? I think that it looks very different, and of course it is in many ways, but I would also like to say it's not so different. Okay, in the military, you've got people in different uniforms, and that makes it very obvious where the power is and power relationships and hierarchy. But, Mike has already referred to the importance of social class, which is slightly different. But even in our society, everybody we're all going around in certain uniforms. It's just a bit more subtle. And there are also, questions of power relationships between, therapist and patient and so on. Although those issues seem to, those matters of power and power and rank seem to be very present in the film, I don't think it's right to imagine that they're not present just because we're all wearing jeans. Well, you are. No. Sorry. just if I could relate it to the question from that friend from Brazil, because this is about, this last question is about power relationships, it is, of course, very important, the political and social environment and the slums and the, you know, here we have the sort of terrifying council flats or whatever, or estates where you can't go on and things like that. This is all connected with social deprivation, lack of education, lack of employment, and all of those things are related to often, you know, joining the army, and it's all somehow connected, I think, terribly relevant. And the way those houses are built, those flats are built, which you can be sort of terrorized along the terraces or whatever, is of course connected as well.
But there is the very stark difference, which I think you're touching on, between this morning, the film, and what Emil was talking about, which was in the services, and this afternoon we're talking about after people have left. And I think that there's something about what we've touched on in a number of different ways about the containment that the services offer and what happens and what gets stirred up and perhaps what gets reenacted then when that's lost. And for me, that's been one of the biggest differences about the conversations of the morning and the afternoon.
And I think the challenge for therapists in the military is that not only is there war going on or the sense that you have to deploy or you're coming back, but the soldiers often don't have a very regular schedule. So to get them every Tuesday at 3:00, it's really hit or miss. I probably see the average person between 4 and 6 times.
I was going to make a similar point. Mm. The Second World War was very much, people stayed at Northfield for 6 weeks. They didn't stay 18 months and thereon. So the work was done. There's a remarkable paper by John Rickman on hysteria in 2 world wars, written about 1941. Mm. And you actually read it through, and you think, you first reading, you think he's done a complete psychoanalysis. Then you actually read it a bit more carefully. You realise all the work he's done actually adds up to about 60 minutes' work. It's quite extraordinary. And he does it by intuition. Yeah. He just takes, as he what he describes in the letters, you listen for the clues and you grab them. And it's a much more rapid and if you don't succeed, the person goes.
Yes, listen to Mike. Obviously, it's very challenging work. But you were saying that you're getting a lot of success. So I'm just wondering, what does work in this area generally? Is it other particular modes that work, and how long does it all take, given where Mike's sitting?
Who are you directing that to?
Ed Bollier.
I'm not sure that anyone said they're getting a lot of success. I think that people have been saying today how difficult this work is. I think that's one of the things I particularly like about Mike's paper, that it is about saying this is slow, difficult work where one's often left thinking, is this development? Where have we got to? But I think also, you know, the difficulty of what one has to bear in oneself in doing the work. So
I thought I heard John say he's getting success.
May I ask Mike something?
Yes.
Is that gentleman who be, he has children and they seem to be important, does he have any contact with them?
No, he doesn't.
And would he want to have contact?
That's a difficult question to answer. In one way, yes, in another way, perhaps not.
And the way? No, because what I'm thinking is a lot of work now being done using the attachments of the men from the army, if they have any when they come out, with the wives and the families, and actually getting the therapy through this attuning them, because the wives are very affected by the men, and the children feel very lost if they lose a father.
Sure.
And working on that front, and you can use other techniques, which I know, which can be very helpful. And that gives the men another incentive. They're not going back to the war, but perhaps they feel that the ordinary world we live in is like worse than war, worse than the battleground. Perhaps they can form relationships that matter in the community, and that would be the incentive to get them more, to use more of the therapy.
I mean,
fancy tests.
I agree with that up to an extent. I think the problem with people like Mr. B is that the good things are terribly, terribly difficult to bear. Mm. So when he's presented with something good, it's not that he doesn't want it, but when he has it, it makes him want to attack it and destroy it.
Mm.
It stirs all kinds of things up, which he needs to have some language to understand before he can begin that kind of process that you're describing.
As a person-centered therapist, I don't always feel it appropriate to ask a client what they've got out of the session I've had with them. But I take on the presumption that you all have not got together to discuss today. May I now ask you individually what you've got out of today of listening to the others?
It's an interesting idea, isn't it? Was it who was saying about groups being structured like that? It was you, wasn't it? I agree that we haven't all got together like this before. I found listening to today fascinating. I had several times of thinking, well, I must go and change my paper because I was going to talk about that. And that's always a little bit anxiety-provoking. But for me, one thing that's really struck me is what Felicity said of, we have very different languages sometimes for talking about things that are actually very similar.
Mm.
There are differences, and I think that would be another whole interesting conversation to have. But what struck me today, and what I feel I'm going to be taking home, is how much there's also the similarity.
Yes, I think I would echo that. I've been struck by how the same themes have come up, and our takes on it have been very similar. Although expressed in very different ways. I've also picked up from, found all the contributions terribly interesting, and picked up from all of them things that were a bit different and very interesting. Very enriching, I found.
I've got I appreciated the eloquence that several of my peers have used and had in speaking about the work they do. And I realized that after 10, 11 years in the military, I need a break.
I think that's the place to